Someone sent me an email asking the following. Is it permissible for a shul not to allow someone to daven in their shul without paying a fee? And the person gave me a couple of marmakomos. He says, for example, in case of, let's say, a Pesach program, who will not allow someone to daven with their minyan unless they pay a fee, or a shul won't allow someone to daven there without membership. Is that halachically allowed? This comes up a lot of times. You'll have on a cruise. You know, there are kosher cruise companies that will take a section of the boat. Let's say a cruise, the cruise is a humongous boat, it has 6,000 people on it, so a kosher cruise company will block off like 500 slots or something, and they'll sell it, and they'll have kosher food and minyanim and tafyomi and kosher entertainment and whatever, and they'll do a whole thing, but they'll charge two or three times the price. I mean, they'll charge a lot more. So sometimes, you know, a clever yid will say, oh, I know that there's a kosher option on that cruise, but I don't want to pay that price, so I'm going to buy your regular ticket on the cruise. I know they have a minion, and then I'll be able to piggyback. I'll use their minion, and I'll use their daf yomi, and you know, I'll win. So the people who run the cruise might say, you can't use our minion. You know, people pay for this. People pay for this convenience, and we're not here to provide for you. So are you allowed to throw someone out of davening? Are you allowed to throw somebody out of a shir? And Pesach programs also. Sometimes they'll rent out a whole hotel and run a Pesach program there, and someone will rent a room in the neighboring hotel or an apartment nearby, and then just, you know, make use of that minion of the hotel. And sometimes that could upset the people that are running the program, or shuls that sell seats for Yom Noraim. Or sometimes it's not even for financial reasons. There are other reasons. There are many shuls that have a policy now that if a person does not vaccinate their children, then those children are not welcome in shul. Are you allowed to exclude people on those terms? Or there are many shuls that if there's there's a pedophile in the neighborhood, that they won't allow him to daven in their shul. So when are you and are you not allowed to say somebody is simply not welcome in shul? So the primary source for this is a Rabbeinu Gershom quoted by the Beis Yosef in some Kuvlim Gimel. Beis Yosef quotes one of the Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom. Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom means one of the Charamim, one of the Cherims of Rabbeinu Gershom, where he writes, the cause of Rabbeinu Gershom is Alba Takanosav, Ish Shehishel Beisel Beis HaKnesses, if a person lends out his house to be used for a shul, V'yeshlo Meriva Emechon Me'akal, and he has some sort of quarrel, some sort of fight, some sort of argument with one of the members of the Tzibur, She'eno Rashai La'osra Elim Kein Yesro Sol Kolakal Ke'echad, that he's not allowed to say that one guy who I don't like is not welcome in my shul. He's allowed to say, look, it's my house and I no longer want to lend it out to the shul. So my house minion is closing up shop, and that's it. No one's allowed. That he's allowed to do. But to exclude one person, not allowed to do it. Rabbeinu Gershom made a takana against this. Now the Ramah in Darkei Moshe, there are quotes from Maran Padova that has two exceptions. Number one, if he never explicitly loaned the area to be used for a shul. He never said, okay, I'm designating my living room to be used for a shul. He just showed up at his house one day and there was a minion in his living room. So he's like, okay, I guess I'll daven with them, and he never said anything about it. So in that case, he is allowed to exclude somebody because he never had agreed in the first place to let the shul in. And certainly, says Maran Padova, the second exception, if he made it tonight from the very beginning that he has the right to make a macha'a, that he's going to retain the right to throw out whoever he doesn't like, if someone doesn't smell the way he would like them to smell, that he's going to throw them out or something like that. So he's allowed to do that. He has the right to make whatever macha he wants. Now, it's very difficult to understand why any of that would help, meaning why the fact that he never explicitly loaned it out or making a tanai should help at all, because the Mishnah Berurah and Sifkat and Peiches over there points out, Vatam, what's the reason for this Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom? Rabbeinu Gershom was just sitting in his house one day thinking, how can I make Jewish people's lives more difficult? No, he had reasons for all of his Takanas, for all of his Charamim. So Mishnah Berurah writes, the reason is that they were Choshesh Lebizayon Dahu Gavra Ayen Gitin Nun Zayin. He says that they're Choshesh for the Bizayon of the person who's going to be excluded, and he refers you to Gitin Daf Nun Zayin. What's Gitin Daf Nun Zayin? Kamtza bar kamtza. Well, in the case of kamtza bar kamtza, it's embarrassing. You're humiliating the person. What? So if he would have made a tenai that I get to throw out whoever I want and humiliate whoever I want, then he's allowed to throw out the unwanted guest. Very difficult to understand why that would be the case. But it is also interesting to note no mention whatsoever of a fee, of any amount of money that is paid, any membership dues. Probably the best source in Shas for the charging of a fee for admission is the story with Hillel, that Hillel was mistaker b'trepek b'kol yom, that every day he earned a certain amount of money, and what did he do with the money? Half of it he would use to support himself and his family, and the other half he would use for tuition, for admission to the Beis Medrash. And one day he couldn't afford tuition, so what did he do? You know the story, right? Everyone knows the story, right? So he went up to the skylight, right? And he was listening to the Torah and the snow. Okay, fine. So what do you see? That apparently he was excluded because he couldn't afford. He couldn't afford to pay. So maybe that's a marimakom, but unlikely. Meaning it's unlikely that he was excluded. He may have not wanted to take advantage of the fact that they would have let him in for free. So he went up to the skylight. Meaning, like the Rambam writes in the Perush HaMishnayos, the Rambam's like, what was wrong with the people in the times of Chazal? Why did you have holy tanoim and amoraim that had to like work as shoemakers? Was there no one that was going to go over to Rabbi Yochanan Sandler and say, listen, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, let's make you Rabbi Yochanan, you know, just a regular Tam Chacham who learns all day. I'll support you. There were always Jews that had money, right? That could have supported them, could have given him bread to eat. What does he have to waste his day being a sandler for? So the Rambam writes in the Perush HaMishnayos Pirkei Avos, of course there were always Jews that were willing to support these holy tzaddikim, these tanaim, these amorayim, but they would never accept it. They would never accept that. They would never use their Torah to gain any advantage, any financial advantage, because that's the appropriate mahalich. The Rambam makes a very strong book that no one should ever have any expectations that because I'm a Talmud Chacham, because I learned Torah, that anybody owes me anything. So that it could be that was the mahalich of Hillel in that case. Also, it was about going to a shir, it was about learning Torah. Hillel could learn Torah at home also. Meaning, unlike davening with a minion, which you can't do on your own, learning is something that you could do on your own. So that Gemara is probably not the greatest maramakom. Now, the nature of this din, the Chaim de Rabbeinu Gershom in general, you have to realize Rabbeinu Gershom actually issued lots of takanos and charamim, like reading somebody else's mail, and marrying more than one wife, and being Megari Shanisha Bal Karcha, and some of these weren't accepted. Some were restricted only to his generation. Some were only accepted in certain Jewish communities, Ashkenazi Jewish communities. Some had a specific time limitation on them, and others were accepted by all Jewish communities everywhere with no time restrictions forever and ever. Some were meant as a geder to ensure that we keep halacha. Others were for the benefit of just society, that the Jewish community should function properly. And it's hard to compare one to the other. Like, for example, the cherem against marrying a second wife was not accepted in Yemenite Jewish communities. And also was limited. It was only at Sof Ha'elef. It's machlokas what he meant by at Sof Ha'elef. Did he mean till the end of the millennia? Or did he mean that he was living in? Or did he mean for 1,000 years? Nafkamina would be, did it already run out in the year 1239? You know, did it already run out, I think 1239, 1237, whenever it was? Or is it first going to run out in the year 2037? Nafkamina, that might be Nafkamina, whether we're still on the original cherem. The cherem not to read another person's mail or texts or whatever was also instituted. He didn't come up with texts, but Pashtus is included, was also instituted by Rabbeinu Gershom to be indefinite and was universally accepted. Yemenites don't read each other's mail either, even as they're married to multiple wives. So each Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom was different from the other. So now, going back to this halach over here that Rabbeinu Gershom made, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, Eino yachal li asra, that you don't have the ability to asr it on a guy who wants to use your shul, wants to use your minion. Makes it sound like you don't even have the authority to prohibit that. If you tell this guy he can't come, then he's still actually allowed to come. However, in Bir Alecha Divrei Maskal Eino Yachal, he writes, Lav Davkahu, the Avar Va'asar, Asr. Meaning, if the homeowner says you're not allowed, then you are not allowed. I mean, as the person who wants to participate, who's being excluded, if the guy who owns the place tells you that you're excluded, you're excluded. It's just that he's doing something wrong by doing that. He's violating this cherim by doing that. Now, there are a number of exceptions to this rule that you're not allowed to exclude somebody from a shul. The Be'er Halacha writes that only if he committed for it to have a shame based on Knesset's Gamur, but if it's his private house, then he's always allowed to exclude somebody. If it's just his living room that's used all the time as his living room, and it's just Stam, a house minion that he has on Friday nights, so he's always allowed to tell someone, you're not welcome in my living room. Although, again, that's difficult to understand in light of the basis being Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. It was also in a person's living room. Although, by the case of Kamtza Bar Kamtza, he was already there. Once a person's there, it's terribly embarrassing to humiliate him and to single him out. Maybe if you tell him in advance, it wouldn't be as bad. In the Bir Alach, he quotes another exception from Marash Doran in Shuva Simin Zayin, that if there's another shul in town, you're allowed to exclude the guy, because you're not robbing him of the opportunity to do a mitzvah, meaning he can go to the other shul, and that's in fact quoted by Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Bir Alach questions that also, though, because, again, if it's based on Kamtza Bar Kamtza, it doesn't matter that there's somewhere else that he can go. You're humiliating him. You're embarrassing him. A third possible exception, Rav Ram David Mi Bachach, the Eish Lav Ram Mi Bachach, says that you can keep anybody out during non-davening times. I mean, a guy just said, I used to have a shul in my house. For the first 4 years my shul existed, it was in my basement. So it would happen every once in a while. I'll come downstairs at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and there's some guy there, I just came to pick up my tefillin or whatever, so that you should be allowed to say, you know what, no, you can't just come whenever you want into my house when it's time for davening. Of course, everyone is welcome to come and daven. In the Piskei Tshuvas in Ha'ara, in footnote 110, he wonders if the same would apply in our shuls, which double as Batei Medrash. Can you ever really close the Beis Medrash? The guy says, I want to just come and learn, so he's not sure about that. Also, a fourth exception, the Tshuva Zera Emes, or Chaim Simenun Hei, he says that if the person is being excluded for a good reason, he's a Bal Machlokas, where you can't have Machlokas in shuls. Machlokas is terrible in shuls. It's the Magen Avraham quotes from the Arizal, that right before davening, a person is supposed to focus on V'yachdu L'Re'echa K'mocha and give tzedakah before davening, because that's a great skula for the effectiveness of our tefillos, to connect to other Jews. So if a person is a Bal Machlokas, he's destroying the whole tefillah of the shul. You got to get rid of such a person. Or people maybe who talk too much during davening and laning and make it impossible for other people to daven properly. Now, you wouldn't do it on the first time someone whispers a word during Kriyas HaTorah. That's it, out, never invited. No, you have to warn him, obviously. But if he continuously ignores the warnings and he doesn't live up to the standards that shul normally expects, then maybe that would be a problem. Now, clearly, shuls need our support, and the right thing to do is to support them, and that's part of the Chovas HaTzibur, to make sure that our Tzibur institutions are supported. And from the perspective of a Yachid who's not paying the membership dues but could afford to, it's obvious that he's doing the wrong thing. But l'chora, it's equally clear that you're not allowed to throw him out if he hasn't paid the membership dues. And you don't have to give him an aliyah. You don't have to let him daven for an amud. According to the Bir Halacha and some Kuflan Beis, there's a long Bir Halacha about Seder Kedima and who davens for the amud. Yard side versus someone in Yud Beis Chodesh versus someone in Shloshim versus someone in Shiva, right? My Zaydi's yard side, my father-in-law's yard side. They have all these dinim of Seder Kedima. Says Bir Halacha, non-members are on the bottom of the list, even if they are in middle of Shloshim and the other guy is in Yud Beis Chodesh. Yeah, but you're not a member of the shul. Non-members go to the bottom of the list. You don't have to give him an amud. You don't have to give him any. But if he's so, how do we define non-members? Most poskim can define non-members as either someone who could afford to pay membership and isn't, or someone who doesn't regularly daven there. Now, many poskim say that you're allowed to use miser money to pay for shul membership, partially because you could daven there even without the membership, meaning that it's working with that assumption. What can you use miser money for? Something that you're getting a benefit from, you probably should not be able to use miser money for. So some of the poskim assume, I'm not really getting a benefit from shul membership because Anyway, I'm allowed to daven there. They can't throw me out. Maybe I won't have a little metal plate on my seat that says my name on it. Maybe I can't. Maybe I won't have rights to the Amud. But fundamentally, I'm allowed to daven there. So that happens to be a major discussion in the poskim. So long story short, when can you exclude somebody from a from an amud, from an aliyah? If a person doesn't pay and he's not a member, certainly on the Pesach program or on the boat, they don't have to give him an amud. They don't have to let him. They don't have to let him have any kibudim. But that and also. But to exclude him from davening is a much more serious matter, and that would seem to be a violation of the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom to tell someone that he's not allowed to daven because you don't want him there. That would seem to be a more serious violation. That would seem to be inappropriate, even as we acknowledge that it's inappropriate for him to expect that while everyone else is paying, that he should get a free ride. That's also inappropriate, but it doesn't mean that we're allowed to throw him out. If a person is mazik l'rabim, a person is, he's such a big gun advocate that he decides he's going to send his toddler to shul with a gun, with a loaded gun that has no safety on it, so we could probably say, I'm sorry, your toddler is not welcome in shul. Or similarly, if a person decides to send his unvaccinated children to shul so that they can get other children sick, so we can probably decide, as many, many shuls have decided. There was one rabbi in South Florida that wrote recently a whole thing about how it's not fair that shuls are excluding unvaccinated children just because people have come to different conclusions and have decided that clean and healthy living is their way of avoiding the measles and the mumps instead of vaccinations. How can we exclude them from shuls? So that's ridiculous. I mean, and the other rabbanim in the neighborhood called them out on that. So that's just, there's a difference between different opinions and just being flat wrong, meaning there is no evidence anywhere by anybody that clean and healthy living protects you from the measles and the mumps, right? Vaccinations do that. So that's something. Okay, but that's a different topic. So, but if someone is doing something damaging, or for example, you have a pedophile, that's also obviously very damaging. So l'chara, the shul has a right to exclude him. So what should you do? But the guy says, "What? I'm putter from mitzvos. I have to daven. I have to daven the minyan. What am I supposed to do?" Well, maybe you should have thought of that before you started up with all those children. But in the meantime, go find a nursing home that has a minyan. Rabbi Billet recommended. Rabbi Heshi Billet recommended. Go find a nursing home. Nursing homes don't have little kids. And you could daven in a nursing home, and that would be a perfectly reasonable solution for someone like that. So that's some of the basic rules. Now, we do take into account, as we mentioned before, if there is another shul in town. That also gets taken into account. If the person has the ability to daven somewhere else.